Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on danger for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P. Jump on your butt.
Hello.
Hello, how are you? I'm trying to sign in and it's not letting me again. So,
you gotta cross your fingers.
I know. Every time I cross my fingers, it's not seeming to work. But
yeah.
I'm trying.
they already tried double songs already.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm just. This bothers me. It's getting worse. I'm getting in here. Anyhow, so how was your day?
Everything was good. Busy. I'm doing research.
Yeah, it's
always
busy.
I'm doing a bunch of recertifications.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday and today was all of my aluminum.
Really?
Yeah. Tomorrow should be all my copper nickel and stainless steel.
Good for you.
Mm-hmm. But, hey, I found a song for you for Thursdays now. So humor
okay.
me for a minute. You got to listen to the words. Humor me for a minute.
I will.
Here, you got to start over. It's by Kiss, and it's called Take It Off, so that's going to be your commando song for Thursdays.
Okay, good. Thank you.
No
that's
worries.
By the time I have a song.
No worries. It's up there. I put it up in the chat room, so if you want to get it.
Well, first I have to be able to get in. They're not letting me.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Just like last week.
So, yeah, there's a couple of things, a couple of topics.
There's a topic that I want to talk about.
Sure.
The only thing is I'm first trying to get in the chat before I start on that issue.
Okay.
Hopefully it works this time.
Okay.
I'm hoping... Let me get there.
or it could be this.
That's a hard
one.
Time getting in.
Well, yeah.
Oh, I think I'm in.
All right.
I think I'm okay. Yep.
No, you're not.
I'm there.
Yet.
Okay.
The other one. This is the other one for Thursdays.
Okay.
Thank you. which one?
We can do both.
Huh?
Can we do both?
Sure.
Okay. That'll work. Okay. Now, this is what
yes.
I want to start with. This is Outlaw Bikers 101. Law enforcement officers from across the country gather each year at a heavily guarded secret location for an annual training on combating biker gangs.
Mm-hmm.
As quoted directly from the promotional material for the course, Outlaw Motorcycle Gang Investigations. From the inside, combating biker gangs from the International Association of Undercover Officers. It's a 5-day, 36-hour training program for law enforcement officers, prosecutors, corrections personnel, and criminal analysts addressing the problems and pitfalls of investigations of outlaw motorcycle gangs. The instructors have managed, supervised, or directly participated in investigations of outlaw motorcycle gangs throughout the United States. The investigative techniques they use will be presented. Also, the many pitfalls and mistakes they made will be graphically demonstrated due to the sensitive nature of the training program and threats of physical harm to some of the speakers. The exact location of the training program will only be revealed for those who are registered.
It's going to be in Georgia this year. It's going to be in Georgia this year, Atlanta.
Okay. Special security will be maintained only and only certified law enforcement officers with proper identification will be admitted. As one of the America's foremost authorities on biker discrimination, Minnesota Aid to Injured Motorcyclists, A.I.M., attorney Stephen O'Brien, who also serves as legal counsel to the Confederation of Clubs of Minnesota and a beat of Minnesota, applied for the court last year but was denied admittance with a written admonishment. I'm sorry. I'm just... like that word just couldn't get past me today, that he would be better suited to attend the NCOM convention. O'Brien
admonished?
Yeah, thank you.
Uh-huh.
It was just a slight blind moment.
Okay.
O'Brien was instrumental in getting the nation's first and only biker anti-discrimination law on the books in Minnesota, and then was successful in getting the new law upheld by the courts when a BAIT member was denied service at a bar. For like-minded bikers concerned with preserving freedom of the road, the Silver 25th Annual NCOM Convention will be held Mother's Day weekend, May 6th to the 9th.
Nope.
No, that's when it was held last year, in 2010.
Yeah, that's correct.
In the Orlando Airport Marriott. And then it just gives information for what it was last year. But quotable quotes, the story of America's quest for freedom is inscribed on her history in the blood of her patriots. Randy Bader, American author.
Mm-hmm.
And the next quotable quote, the story of America's quest. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to repeat the same thing. I apologize. Okay.
No worries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I find it, I'm sorry. They are not... I didn't realize that they were referred to already as motorcycle gangs.
Mm-hmm.
In the regard of how they look at them.
Right.
Any biker club. It's a club. I've never seen it to be a gang. Is it a gang because it is more than three people? Is that how they figure that to be?
Yeah, three people are standing together and they're all wearing support shirt or whatever. And they're considered, all the guys got to do is get on the radio and say, it's these three suspicious characters, and then you're pegged.
Well, you know, but still, when we were kids and we all hung out together, if there were 10 or 15 of us, and we were just either sitting in the park, walking down the side streets, going from one friend's house to another, were we considered a gang then because there was a group of us?
Yeah.
Why? You can't have a group of friends come together?
No. You can't, like in Australia, they're trying to make it so you can't even associate with your friends. You can't call, write, nothing.
Right. I understand that, but I'm sorry, I do not look at them as a gang. It does not state gang.
Mm-hmm.
A gang is the Cribs, or the Latin Kings, or, you know, whatever is else out there, which we know. That's
talking
a gang.
You're talking about street gangs.
That's a street gang, right. But
mm-hmm.
Now when they form in their cars, or, you know, are they considered still a street gang?
Yeah.
They don't have motorcycles.
Oh.
But some of them do. So, but then, you know, law enforcement has motorcycle clubs. Are they referred as a gang? Are they 1%?
No. No. They want to be. They want to be.
Because they have a badge.
Well, yeah.
So what's the difference? They're doing the same thing. So they're contradicting what they are putting out there to be. Why have a weak meeting in regards to motorcycle gangs when they have their own clubs themselves?
Yes, they do.
And they have their own buildings that they converse at. So
yeah.
What is the difference?
It's exactly. I've been asking that for years. Get out to me.
Yeah.
Let's see who this is. Hold on a second.
Okay.
514.
Yeah, it's me.
Go ahead.
Hi, Kitty.
Hi.
Kitty,
what do you think about that?
I think it's a little weird. You know, it's kind of like a double standard. They can have, but not anybody else.
Exactly.
It's not right.
No, we know street gangs.
They can all get together
are.
And converse because they wear badges, but because the rest of the population doesn't wear a badge, we are not allowed to do the same thing.
No. So even if you have a get together with your friends, if you have 30 people at your home, you're conversed as a gang. Because you're having a group of people at your home. Or if you have a group together out somewhere.
Yeah, I find that a little extreme.
At some point, that's how it's going to be classified.
It's a little extreme.
Just a little bit.
I think, hold on a second. Is that you, Stacy?
Oh, wow, am I on the air and I'm mumbling stuff?
No, we didn't hear that. You were muted.
We didn't hear you.
I'm commenting on everything, and I'm like, oh.
No, you were muted, hon. You're fine.
Welcome from the New England area. I hope everybody had a great Easter.
Yes,
yeah,
we did.
You.
Ate too much and still have plenty left over.
You know, the stuff about the gang stuff, okay, I kind of, well, y'all know how I cringe on that stuff. But
I know.
I wonder if it's some type of sense of the way people were raised, because I sit and I talk with my grandmother, and she's 95 years old, and whenever she refers to, like if I tell her I was out with my friends or different things like that, she always refers to it as, oh, you were out with the whole gang. So I'm wondering if just the way society has gone from, let's say, go back 60-something years up to present, you know, if the stigma started way back then, if you, you know, gathered in a small group somewhere, you were automatically considered, you know, possibly up to trouble or quote-unquote,
yeah,
the gang stigma.
But see, back then, a gang was getting together in a good way with your friends. Okay?
But it was also, now my grandmother would refer to, you know, other things over the years. Well, when that gang or group all gets together, there's all kinds of trouble, you know. And I'm just wondering if the term gang has just created some type of stigma, the way people refer to it, you know.
Right.
And I think they just
go overboard.
Yeah, exactly. Go any type of overboard they can.
Right.
You know, it's like if I was hanging outside with, let's say, you, Nora, and a couple of
right.
your friends, you know, somebody going to call the cops and say there's a gang of females out in front of somebody's house? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. They need to take that word gang and do something with it. Seriously.
Well, yeah, because gang should be where it's legit to be used. Meaning, like here in Chicago, there is a town, well, it's actually a neighborhood. It's called the Englewood neighborhood. It's
okay.
One of the roughest parts of here.
Okay.
Now, they are heavily gang. Okay.
Right.
Now, what they have a special task force in that neighborhood that strictly is for the gang purpose. Okay, so I can understand that. I don't have a problem with that because they're looking at the street gangs, the shootings, the everything
but,
that takes place.
But you know something? Here's the thing. I mean, the street gangs up here are the same ones that you were referring to before and
right.
a few others, okay?
Right.
They want to be recognized as gangs.
Right.
Okay, if you want that stigma attached to you, that's fine. But
right.
as for other things, when it's been stated over and over in court, over and over with people, over and over with so many things, why attach that gang stigma to the place
to
that it doesn't belong.
Exactly.
To make everybody look bad.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
It's just like this. Art has a good point here. He said Leo wants to look like and act like, but not be accused of being one.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. You know.
Right.
Well, and the culture just as bad because they're a gang too.
Right.
The what? I didn't
hear
police,
what she said. Because they have
oh.
motorcycle clubs all over the world. So they're the same
yeah.
thing as everybody
you know,
else. They're a gang.
Well,
exactly.
The fire departments have their own motorcycle clubs. The police departments have their own motorcycle clubs.
Yeah, so they all have to be considered
have
gangs.
They
I'll
have buildings
you.
That they go to, okay, that they have their events at. So they're doing the same thing as motorcycle.
All the other motorcycle clubs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The only
so
thing
they're
is
a gang.
They're not
the
wearing
thing.
The 1% patch.
Nope. When I was 18.
No, they were wearing a badge.
There was a huge motorcycle club, and they were called the Blue Knights. They were retired cops and former police officers, and that club was huge. It used to gather like every Sunday in the mall parking lot, and we're talking hundreds of bikes to go on a run. You know, but they also were referred to, people like in the area would refer to them as the police gang. You
right.
know what I'm saying? So
you ever noticed they always had an escort for whatever town they were in?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, you know,
I mean, we get
Blue
enough
Knights
we don't have to ask
there.
For one, but they show up anyway.
Right, but the Blue Knights are still out there, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I can't think of the name, but there's some guys out of San Diego. Bill and I were talking to them a couple years ago when they showed up at the Bike Blessing, which, by the way, will be this Sunday at Bill's. It's going
right.
to be the big party in the street outside. But, no, these guys showed up and Bill and I were talking. And the guy said, our bylaws and our code are stricter than the CIA's. And I just said to the guy, well, you guys seem like a bunch of uptight assholes anyway, so I'm done. I walked away.
Well, you know, you have to understand. Like I said, they have their own clubs, just like the one percenters. So why are they not considered a one percenter?
Because I think
when
you use the terminology as gang, you write up a headline or you say in the news, this motorcycle gang or blah, 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 blah. As soon as people read the word gang, they automatically are like, oh, my God, it strikes some type of fear nerve. And that's where I get back to, you know, like I said, I think terminology is totally wrong. And I think people back X amount of years ago, you know, started with that terminology and just have created the stigma that goes with that word. So you attach that word to anything or anyone that you want society to automatically cringe at, and it works. It absolutely works.
Right.
I think it's some type of fear tactic, you know, because, I mean, old ladies have bingo clubs and crocheting clubs and knitting clubs, and they're a gang of 80-year-old women doing their thing. Should we, you know, barge in on them and say, hey, you're a gang. It's time to get you arrested. You know, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Well, see, like in the 50s, they were called you know, like the guys with the hot rods and stuff. They were called the greasers. Okay.
Yeah, my father was a greaser.
Right. So, of course, the police always looked at them as the same way. Why?
Yeah.
Because they drove hot rods. Because they wanted to do a little drag racing. Why? Because they weren't bothering people. They weren't hurting anyone. It's the same thing. So, and throughout time, everybody has been stigmatized one way or another, okay? If you associate, you had the stigma.
It's absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
You know, because like I said, when I have had my friends here, you know, people are like, oh, my gosh, and what?
Exactly.
You know?
It's that.
My
it's that word.
I love them. Right.
Yep, it's that word. It's because the media and society
has blown
really
it so out far fast.
Exactly.
Know?
I mean, even if you read the regular headlines, you know, it says a gang of people gathered or a gang of blasé splee was hanging here. And I'm telling you, as soon as you see that word, people are automatically like, oh, my God, what is going on in this town? You know, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
I know. Like I said, but unfortunately, they're not ever going to change. They're always got a stigma, you know, in regards to one percenters. And, you know, the thing is, there's, and I'm saying this excessively openly, I would always raise my kids to look at there's good and bad in every single person. Meaning,
absolutely.
There's
absolutely.
Good people, there's bad people. And, you know, it doesn't matter who they are, what they are, what they wear, what they don't wear, what school they went to, what school they didn't attend, what kind of job, it does not matter. There's good and bad in everyone. So just because if there's a few bad ones, doesn't make them all the same.
Exactly.
But unfortunately, everybody gets that stigma.
That's
you
true.
Know, if you wear, okay, I don't think you were with us, Stacey, on one topic that Phil and I did some shows back. There was the Senate, congressman from my state here, doing something in Washington. Okay, now he wanted to prove a point in regards to colors. He had a hoodie on, straight South color, no writing, no nothing on it. Okay, and the police stopped him because it was a gang-related color.
Right.
Not realizing that he was a congressman. But that's how...
Oh, no, they knew he was a congressman. He was just being a smartass.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he was trying to prove a point. He actually did it. Okay? So it goes as far as if a congressman is, okay, as Phil said, being a smartass, and he wants to portray in regards to wearing a hoodie of a certain color, and he gets stopped. Well, guess what? Now you just got profiled.
Yep.
Because of a color. So now here we come back again. It's all about profiling.
Well, I got one for you. Just listen to this, and you'll probably, Stacey, you probably read this.
Lay it on me.
And it goes like this. RICO charges and probation scandal spurred debate by Laurel J. Sweet. This comes from Monday, March 26th, so it's a while ago. But U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz brandishing of RICO, a powerful federal weapon used to crush mobsters and violent motorcycle gangs, to prosecute former state officials and probation for kowtowing to legislators' patronage, Mans has triggered a debate that some predict could be headed for the U.S. Supreme Court over whether traditional politics in Massachusetts raises to the level of racketeering and a potential 20 years behind bars.
Oh, yeah.
Commissioner John Jack O'Brien, Elizabeth V. Torres, and William H. Burke were charged with racketeering and mail fraud, and federal indictments unsealed Friday that accused them of operating a rigged decade-long patronage hiring and promotion scheme to keep the happy politicians on Beacon Hill in charge of the money. The indictment speaks for itself. Ortiz's office said in a statement yesterday, declining to comment further. But O'Brien's attorney had to suggest that these three individuals were operating in a criminal enterprise because recommendations were made for employment. This is a culture where there's money in an envelope in a handshake. That's where patronage is illegal. Well, I've seen the handshake and I've seen the money in the envelope. But so Travis's attorney, R.B. Bailey, filed to go to trial. We're going to challenge the government every step of the way on their theory of prosecution. Decrying the charges against O'Brien and his two top deputies, a fraud on the public, Cambridge constitutional lawyer Harvey Silvergate, who was not involved in the case, the explosive case will eventually land before Supreme Court justices who will have to draw a line in the sand between politics and crime. So there we go on that one.
Right. I'll tell you what, I'm not sure about everywhere else, but, you know, here's the crazy part. I'm going to let you guys in on something. Nora knows about this. No, sorry, I'm going to go to something else. in Massachusetts, I'm sorry, it's going to change the subject if I go somewhere else. In Massachusetts and Rhode Island, these two states, which I sit right on the line. I can go 5 minutes up the road and I'm in Mass, and come 5 minutes down the road and I'm in Rhode Island. I'm notorious for dirty politicians. And it's notorious for politicians to get out of the dirty things they do. We see headlines about different things, and, you know, sometimes we never get the outcome of how those things go. But, yeah, these two states are very, very crooked, or so to say, and they kind of operate. And the city of Providence, Rhode Island, I mean, I love going to Providence. I love the place. But they're really notorious for doing stuff like that. And, I mean, it goes back to, like, you know, the city works departments and different things like that. people giving people money to get people jobs or take away people's jobs or, you know, this has been going on since I was a kid. But, you know, that's government, and they do what they see fit. I will give you an example. This week in Providence, Rhode Island, anybody could look it up. It was on the news last week in the beginning, you know, as this week's going on. There was a couple of, I think it was a congressman, but I know the other guy was a Rhode Island cop. And they both got up on DUI charges. And once it was all said and done, the DUI charges were dropped. And that just burned in me, especially that they're both two city officials. They're representing the community. And anybody else with DUI, you, of course, crucify, tie, and bound, whatever you got to do, you know, because that's the way things run. But because they are, like I said, city and state officials, everything is just kind of like, you know, a pat on the hand and, you know, be a good boy and go back to work and don't do it again. And, you know, I think it's crap completely altogether.
Right.
And,
well,
you know,
Illinois is a very corrupt state.
Yeah.
Excessively corrupt.
No, not there.
No, everybody just hears about us all over the place. You know, our governor is everything.
Haven't changed since I left, huh?
No, nothing's changed.
You think of Chicago and you think of Al Capone, you know? And,
right.
And it's just like, it goes from there, right, Nora?
I know. It's just never ending. And, you know, what's funny is Capone is only buried like a mile down from my house.
Well, I used to live, his house was bought by Muhammad Ali in St. Joseph, Michigan. I'm not sure if Muhammad Ali still owns the home. But when I was living out in Michigan, I got pictures outside the house, and it says Muhammad Ali on it. But it was Al Capone's old place, and there's boathouses there, and supposedly, quote unquote, there was hidden tunnels that took Al from St. Joe, Michigan, to go across Lake Michigan to get to Chicago. And he would go back and forth this way and elude the police, you know, because it only takes about 45 minutes to get across the lake into St. Joe.
Right.
You know.
Well,
so.
I heard, you know, a few years ago, Geraldo did the same thing and everything was empty.
I don't know because, you know, that was just rumors that, of course, circulated around. And, I mean, you couldn't get access to the property because it was, at the time when I lived out there, it was owned by Muhammad Ali. That was the name in the box, you know. So I have no clue. That's just what I heard.
Yeah. No, it's like, what do you do? Where do you go? How do you do it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Tell you how to get across the border in any one of the numerous tunnels.
You're talking about down in Mexico?
Yeah, I'm like 40 miles north of it.
Did you see, they built some type of huge tunnel that I think it led up into the California area or something like that, and it was a major thing for like drug trafficking. They showed it a couple of months back on the news, and I couldn't believe it had electricity and everything running through it.
Really?
And I was like, you might want to look that up somewhere, but I watched it on the news here, and I was like, are you kidding me? And it was like miles and miles and miles long. And when they aired it on the news, they said that they also had leads on other tunnels further around the state, and I was just stuck on stupid. I was like, oh my God. I think it led up into California, you know, but when they were showing the DEA, whoever them people are, we know who they are, but they were in the tunnel and showing the camera crews, you know, the lengths and the ladder and, you know, the electricity and this, that, and the other, and it was a pretty high-tech thing they had going on. You know?
Yeah. They got a lot of that And the ones they find are the ones that they wanted them to find.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Of course. Because, you know, even with the drug trafficking, we all know. We all know. And this goes back to Vietnam and a couple of different other little things that, you know, the government allows what drugs they want circulated. And, you know, I look at it like this. If you're not paying them a cut somehow, some way, you're the one that's going to be sent down the river, because that's really the way I believe it works. You know, when you get on, like, large-scale industry-type deal, not your typical street peddler that pushes nickel bags, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got another one. This is up in your neck of the woods in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Okay.
Did you know Obama has secret police?
Well, aren't they automatically assigned to the president, secret police?
No.
No? Okay.
The police in New Hampshire, the arrests that they made in the last couple of weeks are private. The Obama administration announced last week that it made America safer by arresting 3,100 illegal immigrants who have criminal records or immigration fugitives or immigration violators. 24 of that number were arrested right here in New Hampshire. Not to get into the whole story of this, but they got a guy who, he was a Dominican. He was convicted of manufacturing marijuana, carrying a dangerous weapon, and receiving stolen property. And now he's also been charged with illegally reentering the country. But then again, since we don't know the man's name, we don't know if any of this is true, nor do we know what becomes of such people.
Exactly.
Are they put in a truck or headed for the nearest border? Or are they put in a box and sent out to sea? Why are we not told their names?
It's like, okay, you said secret police, and I'm automatically assuming, you know, stuff to deal with the president. But then as you go along in the story, do they want people to, is it like a scare tactic? Like, you know, like, what was it, back in the day, if you didn't follow the rules or whatever, the Gestapo was going to get to. You know what I'm saying? Are they trying to put fear and scare tactics into everybody by using secret police, you know?
Well, the ICE spokesman, Ross Feinstein, said it's a privacy policy. But whose privacy is it? Because immigrants with criminal records are entitled to privacy, but the public isn't entitled to know anything? That's pretty novel.
We wonder why
the agents, to go along where you were going, why the agents, Stalin, Hitler, and other despots didn't use that line when they were having Jews, homosexuals, or people who looked at them in a cross-eyed simply disappear.
Yeah.
Obama did the same thing a year ago, announcing with great fanfare the arrest of 2,900 illegals across the country. With six of those in the privacy policy cases alleged to have occurred in the Granite State. So basically, the union leader and the Sunday News out of New Hampshire are suing ICE in federal court to force them to provide the names of those it claims to have arrested. We believe the taxpayers and citizens of New Hampshire have a right and need to know when people are arrested here for whatever reason. Like they,
absolutely.
I read it last week out here. They just said the towns. They didn't say where. They didn't say who. They just said the towns. Two Hispanic males there.
It's crap because a United States citizen gets arrested and basically everything about them is pow, put in the paper. You go into the court system, whatever. It's public knowledge. You know, the public has the right to know what's going on. It doesn't matter. You went to this country illegally, legally, whatever. If you're carrying on here and doing whatever it is you're doing, it's bullcrap because we have the right to know who the people are, where they lived, what they were doing, especially if they're quote-unquote carrying on with bad business. You know, regardless, they may have paid taxes, whatever, but we are the taxpayers. We are entitled to know when there is an arrest, who they are arresting, and for what reason. And I don't give a shit if they're illegal or not. I pay my damn taxes. I have the right to know. That's my right. They're taking away our rights as citizens. You know, and don't get me going on this subject, Phil. I'll be blowing up the phone. Oh, my God. It's crap. It's crap. And it's exactly like the Gestapo, just what I said, you know. It's put the fear tactics in everybody so everybody can walk around with their heads down or tied between their knees and worry, you know, is that person with the secret police? Is that person with the secret police? It's crap. It's crap.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's like Art can tell you about this if he chimes in. And I see we got a few people in some returning champions in the chat room, but no, it's like they have a thing. It's called the California Step Act. They have the UNRRA Act of 1974. I've been told by the police in my town that I can be pegged in with one of the heavy hitter clubs with a gang enhancement. Threatened to be arrested for obstruction, all kinds of shit. I think it's funny because they're just reaching for straws, but they haven't arrested me yet. So obviously,
well, that's you know, guilty by association. They like to throw that around. Oh, you were hanging out with Blase Splee and Spliff Dubois, and you know you're associating. You are, you know, you bad. You going to jail. You know, it's crap. It's crap. So many of our rights are being violated, and you know it's going to continue to get worse with each day that goes by. Because
and as Bill says, wake up.
Yeah. Well, the thing is it goes back to something I argue about quite frequently when I come on this show: the ignorance of our society. Our society is uneducated, and they are, you know, ignorant to the fact of that, you know, they're twisting the Constitution, twisting our rights to any way they see fit, and, you know, it boils to a basic arrest. A cop arrests you, and, you know, you don't even know that you can turn around and say, I want a lawyer. I'll spend the night in jail. I'll go to court in the morning. I want a lawyer. People automatically, okay, I'm guilty, and blah, 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 because they don't realize that, you know, this is your right to shut your mouth, get an attorney, and not tell nobody nothing, you know, and this is what we're breeding into society, because there's just no more old-fashioned family values where you sit down with your family every night at 5 o'clock, have dinner, talk about sports, politics, news, religion, whatever, inform your family. It doesn't exist.
Of a sudden it's about, you know, you make dinner, everybody grabs a plate, goes off someplace, and it's like, all righty.
Yeah.
You know, I have plans.
Yeah, well, it's like what I told you guys a while back. I'm in college, you know, and I'm surrounded by a lot of younger folks. And we're talking like 18, 19, 20, 21 that have no clue whatsoever. They're going to get an education, but they have no clue about society in general. And I wasn't raised that way. I was raised to be aware of my surroundings, know what's going on, get involved, blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean, that's the way my family is. In New England, in this area, it was called back then, we were a diehard French Catholic family. And those families were tight. They were. You know, and we were informed, we were educated, and today parents, because both parents have to work two jobs, there's no time to take time out and educate your children on old-fashioned values that will protect you, because it's not going to be taught in a classroom, it's not going to be taught by the mayor of the city you live in, it's going to be taught at home, and people just don't want to do that anymore.
No, and Bill's two favorite words are what, Nora?
Shut up.
Hold on a second. 773, you're live.
Hey, what's going on, Phil? It's Terry Hardy.
How you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. Just thought I'd call in and listen to the show. Didn't think you'd put me on the air, but nevertheless, I'm glad to be here and glad to hear you guys once again.
You've been listening for a little bit. You want to give a comment on what you've heard so far?
You know, my mind's on something totally different, but I think what struck a nerve more than anything else is the fact that we're not really paying attention to what's going on around us. And, you know,
amen.
We live in a land that people just don't know what time it is. I mean, we're just existing in this place. And while we're just existing in this place, people are hoovering all over us doing whatever they want to do, exercising whatever they want to exercise, despite what the standards are set forth in that document. So you really have to have a watchful eye on that. And it goes far, far beyond that. That's a fact.
Yeah.
You really can't argue that. And that's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why, you know, Phil and Bill did this great show, you know, to inform people that don't have any idea or any clue on what's going on. Because it does help. There's a lot of people that are just naive and don't have the knowledge to understand what's going on.
I think it's that fear factor, too, that we all exist in. For some strange reason, everybody's afraid of the man, quote unquote, when in fact the power is with the people, provided that the people exercise the power that they have, and that's the knowledge.
Right. Providing they don't gather on a street corner in multiples of three and be, you know, signified as a gang.
Yeah.
Well, just to enlighten you guys, Terry did something the other day on I-90 in Chicago. Maybe you want to tell everybody what happened with that, Terry.
I did what?
You had that big call out for everybody to meet you on the Dan Ryan. Was it the Dan Ryan I-90?
Oh, you're from my state. Okay.
No, that wasn't me.
No?
That wasn't me. No, that wasn't me. We've actually.
You guys didn't have a big push thing over the weekend?
Oh, wait a minute. Jesus. Listen, I must be going crazy. I'm getting old, Phil. Yeah, that was Ride for Change, Ride for Hope. Every year we've been supporting an initiative to allow access to educational opportunities at historically black colleges and universities for inner city youth. And what we do is provide a motorcycle motorcade escort of tour buses en route to these schools to get some of these kids out of these war-torn neighborhoods and on a bus down into the deep south to connect them with their cultural heritage and institutions to give them a little insight as to where they come from, what their story is, and try to, you know, inculcate some values to.
We need more of that. We need
more
of that. That is an excellent, excellent thing. And as the cities get worse and the towns that surround the cities get overcrowded and they start to become worse, it's true. You need to get the kids out of those areas and sit them down and educate them. And that's the truth. You're learning about your heritage and culture and everything else.
Right. You know,
it's a wonderful thing what you're doing here, because I'm from the same state you are. Which is good, because so many of the kids don't feel safe, you know, and it's a shame. They should feel safe to go to school, but they don't.
That's right. And, you know, I think one thing that Bill said, too, really helped me open up my eyes about this Ride for Change, Ride for Hope campaign, because everywhere that we spread the project around the country, we were primarily, you know, working with initiatives that dealt with African-American or minority youth. And Bill had mentioned something to the effect that at one point in time, all of us, meaning all of the races, have been crapped on. And everybody's got a story.
Absolutely.
And that's what Ride for Change, Ride for Hope is all about. You know, along America's roadways, every town, there's a unique story that could be retold that highlights a historical person, place, or an event. And when we retell those stories and the lessons learned and the values instilled as a result of them, it really helps us to appreciate that despite our challenges in this country, we've always found ways to move this country forward. And we're at that point again where we really need to get together and start talking about issues that matter, like you guys are doing on this show. But this really needs to be a vertical, not a vertical, but a lateral conversation and local communities to help people understand where we are and how we can get to where we need to be.
Absolutely.
To continue to do what it's supposed to do.
Right.
So,
if you noticed, I post some of the things you send me and some of them I miss, and I apologize for that.
Well, we appreciate your help from day one. And we want to continue to move forward, right for change, right for hope, being a little bit more expansive, because change and hope mean so many different things to different people.
Absolutely.
And we need to get into some of these areas outside of Chicago and allow some local groups, motorcyclists, to identify, you know, some of the programs that we could engage ourselves in, and providing some a little economic thrust with the proceeds from our events, or at least a portion thereof, and yet continue to tell these stories about America's history. That's what Life for Change, Right for Hope is. So we're open for those partnerships. In fact, we brought forward Right for Change, Right for Hope Foundation last year in May, almost about this time, at the Muhammad Ali Center in Louisville, Kentucky. We made the debut. And we're still looking for more partners to join in with us at the foundation to maximize its full potential. We want to position it as the motorcycle community's principal organization or advocacy organization.
Send me the info
around the country.
It sounds like a wonderful, wonderful program. And, you know, I'm in the New England area, Massachusetts / Rhode Island. And I can tell you, just, you know, the kids in Providence, Rhode Island, the kids in Boston, Massachusetts, would benefit a great deal from a program like that, because the cities are just, you know, it's getting bad. It's a fight for survival, and they need more programs like that to educate them and to get a little bit of self-worth, because when you get involved with a program, whatever it is, you begin to feel good about yourself and your self-worth. And if you feel, you know, that you're on top of the world, that projects outwards. And, you know, you're educated, et cetera. And that's a positive, positive thing. And we need more positive things in these younger folks' lives, because the world, like you said, you know, it's not getting any better. And if we don't learn about our history, then the past will repeat itself once again.
Absolutely.
Totally agree. And we still would like to have an opportunity to move up into the New England area. We need a contact in those areas to make that happen. And I certainly encourage you to jump onto our website at worldofsoulmc.com. Click on my face right next to the logo, Right for Change, Right for Hope. It tells you about the foundation, what we're looking to move forward with the program. And let's do that. Let's combine our resources and be a positive influence on these kids, and even adults need mentors too. When it really comes down to it, we all live in the same country, but yet so many of us are disengaged with what an American really is. So we kind of need to re-educate people as to what being an American is. So many people don't even go to the polls on the election day, but yet they have so many complaints the day after.
When I hear a person complaining about government politics, and it's a heavy-hitting conversation, like in a local Dunkin' Donuts coffee shop, the first thing I stick my two cents in, I'm like, did you vote? And when I hear no, I'm like, then you don't have a right to complain. It doesn't matter how you feel about politics in general, but if you want change, then you have to vote for change. And if you don't vote for change, then why are you complaining?
That's right. It's the very simplest of things that we have so far been removed from. I can't really give an explanation for it. I really don't want to give an excuse. But it's not really, these really aren't problems. They're opportunities for us all to find solutions. And it starts with conversation.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I had a conversation the other day, and I told you we built that ship, and it's called the Medgar Evers. And we sent it out for a sea trial the other day, and his wife showed up with the children and had breakfast with us and thanked us for building the ship and all that stuff. And she still had some fire in her voice about.
Wow, that is phenomenal that the U.S. government has honored Medgar Evers with is it a battleship?
It's like a roll on roll off. It's a spy ship.
It's a spy ship.
No, supply. Supply.
Oh, a supply ship. Very good.
Yeah.
How big is it?
It's 867 feet long.
Nice.
Did you say 800?
867 feet long, yes.
Wow.
And the one right behind it that I'm going to launch, we're going to launch on May 5th, which is Cinco de Mayo, is going to be the Cesar Chavez.
Nice. Well,
yeah,
America's enemy.
Go ahead.
Yeah, America's enemy. Better watch out.
Yeah.
Now you build these boats, Phil?
Yes, I work for a company that works for the government, and we build and take care of all the Navy ships that, like I just finished working on the Freedom, which was made from materials from the World Trade Centers. And then
wow.
We have another one coming in. It's going to be called, I think, the Justice.
Yeah, my dad used to, when I was a child, and you're going back now like 35 years, used to work for General Dynamics in Quincy, Massachusetts, and he used to make, which is a sister partnership to Raytheon, but he used to weld and make the nuclear submarines.
Yeah, I do that. I said earlier in the beginning of the show, I just redid all my, I'll do my copper nickel and my stainless steel. I have to keep my certs up.
Phil, I want to jump in here and excuse myself from the show. I want to thank you for allowing me to be on and have a few words with you guys this evening. I enjoyed it.
And, like I said, send me whatever you want me to publish. We had 62,562 hits today on the blog, so people are looking all over the world.
Sounds good. And remember, everybody, worldofsoulmc.com.
World of Soul email address in the chat room.
Sounds good. Have a great evening, everybody.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, so basically, I got something for you guys I want you to listen to. This is going to be Jack Webb and Harry Morgan. And the heading is Telling Obama What He Needs to Hear. Coming up right now.
Son, don't think you have a corner on all the virtue vision in the country, or that everybody else is fat and selfish and you're the first generation to come along that's felt dissatisfied. They all have, you know. Have the same opportunity and freedoms that you do. The fact is, more people are living better right here than anywhere else ever before in history. So don't expect us to rule and play dead when you say you're dissatisfied.
All are stronger, healthier, better educated, and you live longer than the last generation. And we don't think that's altogether bad. We've done quite a bit of fighting all around the world. Whether you think it was moral or not, a lot of people are free today to make their own mistakes because of it. And that may just include you.
I don't know. Maybe part of it's the fact that you're in a hurry. But some problems you can't get quick answers to, no matter how much you want them. Show me how to get rid of the unlimited capacity for human beings to make themselves believe that they're somehow right and justified in stealing from somebody.
I don't think that we're telling you to lose your ideals or your sense of outrage. They're the only way things ever get done. And there's a lot that still needs doing. And we hope you'll tackle it. You don't have to do anything dramatic like trying to come up with a better country. You can find enough to keep you busy right here. While you're at it, don't break things up in the name of progress or crack a placard stick over somebody's head to help him see the light. Be careful of his rights, because your property and your person and your rights aren't any better than his. And next time, you may be the one to get it. We remember a man who killed 6 million people and called it social improvement.
So hang in. Don't try to build a new country. Make the old one work. It has for over 400 years.
You guys get that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you, anybody want to comment on that? I think it's absolutely right. To the point.
And here's that awkward silence. Yes, we did want to say things, but unfortunately there's so many places you can go with that.
I know.
I'm sorry I got interrupted by my 10-year-old.
That's all right. I'm going to take a couple minutes. I got something to do, so I'm going to play this song. I'll be right back. But I'm not even going to tell you what it is. You'll catch it when I turn it on.
Can you dig it? total. One gang could run this city. One gang. Nothing would move without us allowing it to happen. We could tax the crime syndicate, the police, because we got the streets, suckers. Can you dig it? Turning us against one another. We have been unable to see the truth because we have been fighting for 10 square feet of ground. Our turf. Our little piece of turf. That's crap, brothers. The turf is ours by right because it's our turf. All we have to do is keep up the general truce. We take over one borough at a time. Secure our territory. Secure our turf. Because it's all our turf.
Yeah, that was out in front of Bill's shop 2 weeks ago. No, I'm kidding. But the guy's got the right idea. All we need to do is come together as a group.
Well, yeah, but, you know, unfortunately, we can't make everybody, and not saying make, but not everybody's going to choose to come together. It's by month.
No.
There will be ones that will, you know, and others that just will always think that, you know, everything is fine when it's not. They're not seeing what's coming. You know, like next year, there's all cell phone providers will have that they're coming out with, if your phone gets stolen, how they're going to shut it down. They already know how to do it. Why they're waiting until next year, I don't know. Because, like, with my carrier, if I misplace my phone, if I lost my phone, all I have to do is call them, excuse me, and they will tell me right where my phone is at.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You didn't know that?
So, no, I already knew that. But what I'm
okay.
saying is, how come they're waiting until next year to say this?
Oh, because they want to get that thing up in Utah up and running, the secret spy center that's gonna track every phone call, everything that ever goes, every transmission of anything you ever do is gonna be recorded.
Well, no,
It boils down to this: they don't want you to know. They can gather up whatever information they deem as fit, and once they have all their information and their resources and whatever it is they do, then they'll announce what they've been doing.
Right.
Of course. It's just like you just all these iPads and all this shit that comes out, like your computers. They're already 5 to 10 years ahead of us now.
Oh yeah, and they have.
Oh. Absolutely. It's you know, when it comes to the computer world, it's always been that way. You know, they're only going to allow us to know so much and allow us to access and have so much while they're sitting on the good stuff. And then
right.
they'll release the good stuff when they got something better. You know, and still, as always, keep society in the dark, keep them with their head between their knees, and, you know, as long as they're the underdogs and the other guys are the upper dogs, oh, their world is merry.
Yeah. Exactly.
Let me ask you this, Stacey.
Yes,
how many batteries in your phone?
Well, one that I can remove and one mysteriously hidden under my SIM card.
There you go.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, a couple of shows back when you were saying, you know, take out both batteries, blah, 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 blah. It's like, I don't even think that that's, you know, if they can't get to you by that way, all the newer cars have, like, GPS tracking devices and devices that if you don't make a payment, they can shut the engine down on you. And, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They just have so many multiple ways of doing what they want to do. And it's, you know, you try to keep yourself safe from that stuff. And the first time you think you're safe, something else is coming along that they know how to manipulate and tap into. So it's like, you know, you don't have privacy anymore. Nothing is private, whether
no.
your voice is being recorded or... somebody's videotaping you somewhere, et cetera. There is no privacy, you know?
Well, I got to stop doing what I'm doing.
I don't even want to know.
I don't either, but it sounded good, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, boy.
Keep it PG, Nora. Keep it PG.
I do. I don't get out of line on the radio, but, you know, it's just funny.
It is, absolutely.
I put something in the chat room right now for you guys. About how to piss off a cop.
Just say, I have rights.
No.
Yeah.
All you got to do is quote the Constitution. But as many of you probably don't know, but people in California know, the state of California recently passed a law saying a warrant is needed for police to search your cell phone if you were placed under arrest.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And you and I have 4G, so you know what happens with the 4G.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have some questions with that. If they're allowed to search your cell phone,
listen
to what Phil said.
Listen to what I said.
Okay.
The state of California recently passed a law, along with Michigan. Michigan was the first one to do it. When you buy a new cell phone and you take your old phone in to trade it in,
yeah.
And you give the guy your phone to download everything from the one phone to the new phone.
Yeah.
You see that little box he uses to do that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, the state of Michigan has 4 of those. So what happened was the ACLU got involved because they were pulling people over for traffic stops and downloading their phone. So the ACLU got them to stop for a while, but they're still trying to do it. So when that came out, California was the next one, where California recently passed a law saying a warrant is needed for police to search your cell phone if you are placed under arrest. You can't do it without you being under arrest.
On some levels, okay, I agree with that. Again, it's like kind of like probable cause. Do they have cause or reason to get into your phone, depending on what you've been arrested for? But I still have some problems with that, too.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, here. The Peace Officers Research Association of California, which opposed the law, argued restricting the authority of a police officer or a peace officer fully restricts their ability to apply the law to fight crime, discover evidence valuable to an investigation, and protect the citizens of California.
Okay. Oh, you mean like plant
wait,
evidence?
Wait. Listen, and that was just the tip of the iceberg. Okay. A person arrested loses their Fourth Amendment when peace officers seize their person and property. Anything found on an arrestee has always been fair game in the court's eyes. If we find counterfeit money in a wallet, a child's porno picture, or narcotics, it was still evidence that was legally obtained by arrest. This one here is by a cop who retired and left California. Boy, am I glad I left California. The wacko legislator and governor do not know what they do. Unless allowing more criminals to avoid prosecution is their intent, I cannot believe they enacted this law after the California Supreme Court, one of the most liberal in the country, upheld its search. I started in California and retired from Oregon. I'm truly surprised liberal Oregon court, either Court of Appeals or Supreme Court, didn't follow California. But I've noticed from time to time and again that anyone that is opposed to something a cop does or just pisses them off in any way is a liberal in the minds of police, one. You have to figure out that out. But before I go on, let's just take a look at what the U.S. Constitution has to say about searching a person's property. The right of the people to be secure in their person, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause, an oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or thing to be seized. Got that?
Oh, yeah. I absolutely did.
When you start eliminating the need for a warrant, you start to go down a very slippery slope.
Absolutely.
And I don't feel like losing any of my constitutional rights.
Absolutely.
If you can't wrap your head around what I'm saying, then wrap your head around this. Someone is arrested for a DUI and all the contents of their electronic device was downloaded. The key here is the subject was arrested. Cell phone was searched even when the reason for the arrest had nothing to do with possibly any evidence to use against them might be on that cell phone. Again, remember, you can and will be searched like this as well. Because at that point, when you're handcuffed, you're fair game. You can't fight back. All you can do is say, I refuse to give up my rights. Just keep repeating it because somebody's recorder's on somewhere.
That's horrible. That's like entrapment almost, but being allowed to do that. That's not going to go over. Well, it doesn't go over well with me, but to think that other states are possibly going to follow, I believe that they would, you know.
Here's my take on it. To me, it's like nothing says, fuck you, respect my authority, like an idle threat written with the wrong word. The best, you know, it's like one guy says the best thing that can happen for this country is a West Coast earthquake where it separates California and floats out in the Pacific.
If they don't need any type of warrant or paperwork or whatever to search and seize whatever they want and they're able to use it in court, is that going to follow suit with, you know, they can kick in your door and take whatever you have in your house and bring it into court? Because, you know, I think, if you had somebody, you know, that was legitimately a bad person, and you needed more probable cause by maybe a cell phone or whatever, I can understand that to a certain degree. But for, you know, the rest of America, that's not good. It's not good. I feel that there should be laws put in place to protect people from that stuff, like what you were talking about with the ACLU. But
to paraphrase a common biker saying, there are two kinds of people, those who have been arrested and those who will be.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. I got something for you right here. Check this out. In
I was invited to give you a taste of a typical law school classroom experience here today, and I thought I would take advantage of this opportunity to do something that's been on my mind for a while, to stand up and to proudly say, God bless America, God bless the Bill of Rights, and thank God for the Fifth Amendment. I'm not ashamed to say I'm proud of the Fifth Amendment, and I'm proud to admit on camera and on the Internet that I will never talk to any police officer under any circumstances, with all due respect, sir. I'm doing something really extraordinary here today, something you'll almost never see another law professor do as long as you live. I'm really putting myself on the spot here. This was my idea. By my invitation, I have given up half of my time, approximately. I'm giving equal time and the last word to an expert who really knows something about what I'll be talking about. So I'm opening myself up to the possibility that he will contradict me. I was a criminal defense attorney when I was in private practice. So I want to make sure, in fairness to you, if I'm misleading you or giving you a slanted or one-sided presentation, you'll be able to get the last word from somebody else. I'm sure he'll have a lot to teach all of us, including myself. The Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution provides, no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. And this unfortunate amendment has gotten a bad rap in recent times, much of it tragically and unnecessarily through, as you may have heard, the headlines. There was a recent Regent Law School graduate who was in all the news for a couple of weeks. She was an outstanding former student of mine, and she really got quite a lot of undeserved flack for the fact that she chose to exercise her right to remain silent when the Senate wanted to ask her certain questions that arguably might have tended to incriminate her. All of the world was aghast. The Christian community in particular looked at this and said, how could a Christian do such a thing? How could a Christian take the Fifth Amendment? And I said, you go, girlfriend. I do the same thing. I'll do it every time. And I want to talk to you about why that's true, but first a quick listening test.
They keep pushing in and out. I'm trying to push them back.
Let me read to you something that was taken out of the newspaper this morning, and I want you to listen to it closely. And I'm giving you a heads up. I'm warning you in advance, which is not fair to you. Not fair to me, but I'm giving you a warning that I'll be quizzing you on this in just a few minutes. This will test your aptitude for legal study and legal practice. Listen closely. It won't take long. Last night, agents of the Norfolk Police Department found three victims of an apparent murder dead in an apartment in the East Ocean View area, the apparent victims of a gangland-style slaying, and possibly the victims of gang-related violence. The police are investigating this as a possible murder and suicide, but right now suspect that the three were all killed by the same individual. No suspects have yet been identified in the slaying, but veteran police detective George Brook has confirmed that police are following up on evidence pointing to the possible involvement of an off-duty naval officer as the perpetrator. The bodies, which were found by the apartment manager at about 8 o'clock in the morning, appear to have been slain sometime earlier in the same evening, probably sometime between midnight and 2 o'clock in the morning. That's it. Those are all the facts I'll ask you to remember, and it won't be for very long either. Let's see how well you do. I'll be quizzing you in just a few minutes. Now, here's the easiest question you'll ever get from a client in all the days of your life. Question, hey, the police are here. Talk to me. What should I do?
Shut
well,
up.
I can give you my answer to that question. In case you
Shut
don't want to get
up.
To a legal expert. Justice Robert Jackson, a prosecutor's prosecutor. Like me, he began his private practice in Buffalo, New York, years before I did. And after that, he served as general counsel for the Bureau of Internal Revenue, the U.S. Department of Treasury, the Security and Exchange Commission, Assistant U.S. Attorney General for the Tax Division, later the Solicitor General and the Attorney General of the United States, and then the Chief U.S. Prosecutor for the Nuremberg Trials. That's an impressive resume. Years later, when he was a justice on the Supreme Court, Justice Jackson stated, quote, any lawyer worth his salt, today we would say his or her, will tell the suspect, his client, in no uncertain terms to make no statement to the police under any circumstances. There's the title of my talk. I'm here to explain to you the surprising and somewhat counterintuitive and admittedly unlikely reasons why Justice Jackson was right. I'm reminded of this because I'm amazed, we're all amazed, by the frequency with which we see newspaper articles coming out all the time from people who really ought to know better, who say, well, I'll talk to the police. I mean, after all, I'm a senator. I'm O.J. Simpson. I'm an experienced, highly powered individual. I've got a lot of experience with public relations, even criminal defense attorneys. There was a local news story here in the Virginia Pilot just a couple of months ago about an experienced criminal defense lawyer who ended up getting convicted of criminal assault because he talked to the police. He was accused of having assaulted another attorney in the hallway. There were no other witnesses to this. A woman said that he grabbed her by the throat during an argument over a case. He denied it. At trial, it was his word against hers. He said, I did not even touch her. But unfortunately for him, when the police had approached him earlier and said, would you be willing to answer some questions? He said, sure, why not? I'm an attorney. I'm a criminal defense attorney. I'm savvy. I'm sophisticated. I've got oratorical prowess. I'm accustomed to dealing with the police, by all means. And then there was a conversation that was not recorded. When the case went to trial, it was no longer his word against hers, because when he testified at trial, I never touched her. The officer took her to the stand and testified. Well, when I met with him, he said he did put his hand on her throat, but just as a joke. Then he had to take the stand again and say, that's not true. I never said that. I never admitted to you that I... Now it's his word against two people. Who's telling the truth? We'll never know for sure. But he was found guilty. Now, here's part of the problem. The heart of the problem, as Justice Breyer on the U.S. Supreme Court explained in 1998, is, quote, the complexity of modern federal criminal law codified in several thousand sections of the United States Code and the virtually infinite variety of factual circumstances that might trigger an investigation into a possible violation of the law make it difficult for anyone to know in advance just when a particular statement might later appear to a prosecutor to be relevant to some investigation. One expert on criminal law recently noted that estimates of the current size of the body of federal criminal law vary, although it has been reported that the Congressional Research Service can no longer even count the current number of federal crimes. That's right. Even the federal government has lost count. These laws are scattered over all 50 pages of the U.S. Code, encompassing roughly 27,000 pages. Worse yet, these statutes often incorporate by reference to the provisions of administrative regulations. Estimates of how many such regulations exist are even less well settled, although the ABA thinks there may be nearly 10,000. Here's one of those 10,000 federal criminal statutes on the book that you probably never heard about. It's called the Lacey Act. 16 U.S.C. Section 3370 says it's a federal offense for any person to import, export, transport, sell, receive, acquire, or purchase any fish or wildlife or plant taken, possessed, transported, or sold in a violation of any law, treaty, or regulation of the United States or any Indian tribal law or any state or any foreign law. People have been convicted in federal court for violating this statute because they brought back a bony fish from Honduras, not knowing that Honduran law, not American, but Honduran law, forbade the possession of the bony fish. People have been convicted under this law because they were found in possession of what's called a short lobster, a lobster that's under a certain size. Some states forbid you from possessing a lobster if it's under a certain length. It doesn't matter if he's dead or alive. It doesn't matter if you killed it or if he died of natural causes. It doesn't even matter if you acted in self-defense. Did you know this? Did you know it can be a federal offense to be in possession of a lobster? Admit it. Raise your hand if you did not know this. There's the problem. And that's only one of 10,000 different ways. You know, the government gets pretty upset when people like me instruct the clients, people like me and Justice Jackson, don't talk to the police, don't answer any questions. But, you know, they can't have it both ways. You people, you've got 10,000 different ways of convicting us. Good for you, but, you know, when the bitter comes to the sweet, when the good comes to the bad, that's 10,000 different ways my client might unknowingly implicate himself in some sort of a criminal transaction. One of the reasons I decided to give this talk, I recently received a phone call from a former student of mine, a regional law school graduate, who may be watching this online. We're putting it on the internet. And he told me, hey, I've been approached by the Internal Revenue Service. They want to ask me a couple of questions. They ask if I'd be willing to. But they say that I'm not a suspect, and I know in my heart I don't think I've done anything wrong in violation of the Internal Revenue Service provisions. Lord have mercy. There's no man on earth, there's no woman in this country who can honestly say with complete confidence, I know I have never violated any provision of the Internal Revenue Code. He said, but they say I'm not a suspect, and I know I've done nothing wrong. It's okay if I talk to him. I said, no, you tell them you will not talk to them without immunity. Explain to him why that was true, and he never heard from them again. Okay, why you should never talk to the police. Let me just spell it out for you. Let me make it plain to all of you. These are the top 10 reasons. I don't want to actually really lie to you. I don't really have 10. I don't have time for 10. But I've got time for 8, and that'll be close enough. Number one, and this really ought to be good enough. Contrary to what you laymen instinctively and naturally suppose, it cannot help. There is no way it can help you. Plenty of folks think that it can, and they're always wrong. You cannot talk your way out of getting arrested. Officer Brooke, you've interviewed thousands of criminal suspects. How many times in your experience have you approached someone, asked if you could ask them some questions because prior to the interview you had some evidence pointing to his possible guilt? And because of the extraordinary persuasiveness and eloquence with which he articulated his innocence, you said, oh, sorry, never mind. Bank call, my bad, I won't. And he talks you out of arresting him. Never, it never happens. I've often asked other criminal defense attorneys, in all of your experience, I once had a case where you looked back in hindsight and said, thank God my client talked to the police. They laugh at me. They say, you've got to be kidding me. It cannot help you. You can't talk your way out of getting arrested. And contrary to what you might suppose if you never studied the rules of evidence, what you tell the police, even if it's exculpatory, cannot be used to help you at trial. Because it's what we call hearsay. Under the rules of evidence, specifically Rule 801 D2A, if you want to look it up, everything you tell the police, as the saying goes, can and will be used against you, but it cannot be used for you. From time to time, I've known attorneys who tried to call to the stand a police officer and say, officer, would you tell the jury what my client told you, because what my client told him was actually good for my case? If you tried that at trial, the prosecutor will object to it as hearsay, and the judge will agree. The police will not be allowed, at your request, to tell the jury what your client told him, no matter how good it may be for your case. It cannot help. And that ought to be good enough reason. That ought to be reason enough to keep your mouth shut. But if you're not persuaded, let me go talk about a couple of others. Number two, obviously one of the most obvious. If your client is guilty, as many of them are, but even if he's not, even if he's innocent, he may well admit his guilt with no benefit in return. Now, of course, many of you are thinking to yourself, well, what's so wrong about that? I mean, shouldn't guilty people be confessing? Confession's good for the soul. It's good for law enforcement. It's good for the prisons. Yes, yes, sure, all those things are true. And like the rest of you, if I or anyone close to me is ever the victim of some sort of a serious crime, I hope they get the right guy. I hope they convict him. I hope they put him away. We all feel that way. Hey, but what's the rush, friends? You don't got to admit your guilt the first time they come by to meet with you. In federal court, 86% of all defendants plead guilty at some point before trial. If your client is guilty and really ought to punish and really ought to have a go through some sort of a cleansing act of contrition and fess up and admit his guilt, there'll be plenty of time to do that. They almost always do. No need to rush. No need to tell the police something. Wait and see if perhaps your client can work out some sort of an arrangement where maybe he'll make some sort of compensation to the alleged victim, or maybe he'll be able to get some sort of a discount in his sentence. He'll be treated fairly then, like everybody else, who had the benefit of a good lawyer who said, please do not talk to the police. And don't forget, by the way, even if your client only admits things that the police already knew, you might think, well, what harm can it do? He says he wants to talk to the police. All he wants to do is admit that he was there. But the cops know that he was there. All right, go ahead and tell them. Well, how can it hurt? It might hurt. If the police officer becomes transferred to Minnesota, or deceased, or injured, or comatose, or cannot be located by the time of trial, the case will be dismissed if there's no confession. But if your client admits two things, that confession is freely admissible against him. It can be a basis for getting him convicted all by himself. Instead of Larry Craig can explain all this to you. The Innocence Project of the United States has confirmed that more than 25% of all the cases where an innocent man was convicted and then later released from prison after he was exonerated by DNA evidence, in more than a quarter of those cases, these innocent people we know to be innocent, made incriminating statements, delivered outright confessions, or pled guilty. How do they do that? He'll tell us all about it, I trust. Here's a couple of famous examples. You can just ask them. You don't have to take my word for it. There on the left was Eddie Joe Lloyd. He was convicted in 1984 of the murder of a 16-year-old girl in Detroit after he wrote to police with suggestions on how to solve various recent crimes. During several interviews, police fed details of the crime to Mr. Lloyd, who was mentally ill, and they lied to him and convinced this mentally ill man that by confessing, he might help them smoke out the real killer. He later signed a confession, gave a tape-recorded statement. The jury delivered it less than 1 hour before convicting him on the basis of this confession. There was no other substantial evidence against him. The judge said, I'd hang you if I could, but the death penalty was not available in Michigan at the time. But after almost 2 decades in prison, he was released after DNA evidence proved that this man was innocent and had falsely confessed to a crime that he did not commit. On the right is Earl Washington, who was released from prison just a few years ago here in Virginia after spending 18 years behind bars after being committed of a rape and a murder that we now know he did not commit after having been exonerated by DNA evidence. But this man, Mr. Washington, who was in fact confirmed to be mentally retarded, was able to confess to several crimes at the request of the police, some of which we know he could not have committed. That's the problem. Some of you are thinking to yourself, well, none of this concerns me because I'm not guilty of anything and I never will be and I will never represent people who do. Okay. Let's talk to you people. You innocent folks, those of you who have never committed a crime and never will, and none of your clients will either, and you wouldn't go out with a girl who did. Fine. You better not talk to the police either, okay? Because number three, we'll put the guilty behind us. Forget about them. Let's talk about innocent people. Number three, even if your client is innocent and he denies his guilt and almost entirely tells the truth, odds are good he will easily get carried away and tell some little lie or make some little mistake that will hang him. This is human nature. There, it's a stressful situation. Imagine a perfectly innocent client. The police say he's been guilty of a murder. He's totally innocent as any one of us. So he goes in there and he meets with the police. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. I was nowhere near there. I didn't kill him. I've never killed anybody. I don't have a gun. I've never had a gun. I've never touched a gun in my life. I was nowhere near Virginia Beach that last night. That last line was a lie. He went over the top. He was getting carried away. He got into this groove. He started saying all kinds of things, almost all of them true, that he knew would tend to exculpate himself. Then he got carried away and just said one thing that wasn't true, and unfortunately for him, they can prove that it wasn't true. He may be convicted on that basis alone. But let's say all that's not a problem. I'll tell my client only to tell the truth. I've met with him. I know he won't lie to the police. He won't make any mistakes. Okay, that's still no guarantee you won't be getting into trouble. Because even if your client is innocent and only tells the truth and doesn't say anything that is false. Now, already, mind you, we're pretty well nigh into fantasy land. The odds of this being anybody being able to pull this off are really quite slim, no matter how innocent they may be. But just for the sake, let's pretend. Let's assume he gives the police nothing but the truth, and he is totally innocent. He will always give the police some information that can be used to help convict him. Always.
True story.
That everything about that is true.
For example, please, here's what your client tells to the police in his denial of guilt.
Sorry, go ahead.
Who, me?
Yeah,
Who was that man speaking? What
attorney.
Is that from?
He's an attorney.
Okay.
Put it in the chat room, and I sent you to all the links.
Yeah, I'm not in the chat room no more. I'm just by phone. But everything he's saying is almost the absolute truth there.
Not done yet.
Okay.
There's 10 things. He's on number 4. And I'm going to play the rest. No, this is good. A lot of people don't know about this, and everything that I put in the chat room, people didn't know about either because I put the link in for what is probable cause. What if police threaten to call in the dogs? This is all on. It's called Flex Your Rights, but it's they have knowyourrights.org. Got questions about dealing with cops? We got answers at flexyourright.org. You can get emails from these guys, and they got other videos. Don't snitch on yourself. The best thing you can say is, I'm going to remain silent, and I'd like to see a lawyer.
Absolutely.
Are police allowed to lie to me? I don't know if you're kidding, but under Amendment 11, or 6, I'm sorry, of the Constitution, also part of our Bill of Rights, you have the right to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation and when to act to show police an ID. So let me play this. He's almost done here.
I don't know who did. I wasn't anywhere near that place. I don't have a gun. I've never owned a gun in my life. I don't even know how to use a gun. Yeah, sure, I never liked the guy, but who did? I wouldn't kill him. I've never hurt anybody in my life, and I would never do such a thing. Let's suppose every word of that is true, 100% of it is true. What will the jury hear at trial? Officer Brooke, was there anything about this, your interrogation, your interview with the suspect that made you concerned that he might be the right one? Yes, there was. He confessed to me that he never liked the guy. And then the prosecutor will put that up in big letters, and he'll say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, it's pretty clear that we've got the right guy here. We've proven that he was in Virginia Beach that night. That's opportunity. And remember, Officer Brooke admitted that after extended questioning, he was finally able to get the defendant to admit that he never liked the guy. There's your motive. Motive plus opportunity. Wham, bam. Please. But jury beat it up. And innocent people get convicted this way sometimes. How often? Hopefully not too often, but we know what happens. The United States Supreme Court, don't take my word for this. In Ohio versus Ryan, the Supreme Court of the United States said, quote, one of the Fifth Amendment's basic functions is to protect innocent men who otherwise might be ensnared by ambiguous circumstances. Truthful responses of an innocent witness, as well as those of a wrongdoer, may provide the government with incriminating evidence from the speaker's own mouth. See, it's not just some criminal defense attorney telling you this. Even the Supreme Court says I'm right. In fact, under the facts of that case, by the way, in Ohio versus Reiner, a child tragically was died, apparently the result of shaken baby syndrome. The question was who had shaken this baby to death. And one of the possible suspects was a babysitter who had spent some time with the child that week. The babysitter's story was, I don't know what you're talking about. I did not kill the child. I did not see it happen. I don't know who shook the baby. It was never me. I never did anything of any violent nature to the child. The Ohio State Court said, well, you've got no Fifth Amendment privilege. You, by your own admission, told the investigators that you've done nothing wrong, that you were not involved, so obviously your answers can't incriminate you. The United States Supreme Court reversed and said, well, that's not true. Even though this babysitter denies shaking the child, denies seeing the child die, denies knowing how the child died, this babysitter, by her own admission, apparently the government wanted to ask whether the babysitter might have been with the child at some point that week, during the week prior to the death. And that answer, although by itself not sufficient to convict anybody, could help convict her. That means she's got a Fifth Amendment right to refuse to answer to the question the court held, because it could be used to help convict. Allman versus United States, the Supreme Court said more than 50 years ago, eerily prophetic. They said too many Americans, even those who should be better advised, view this privilege as a shelter for wrongdoers. They too readily assume that those who invoke it are either guilty of crime or commit perjury in claiming the privilege. That's not true, and it never has been. But it gets worse. Can I hear yours? It can. Number five, even if your client is innocent, only tells you the truth, and does not tell the police anything incriminating, which, by the way, is almost impossible to pull this off. I mean, imagine talking to the police for 2, 3, 4 hours, and somebody like him can't somehow manage to extract from you something that could be used to help convict you. That'd be extraordinary. I don't think anybody pulled it off. But even if you could pull it off, there's still a grave chance that his answers can and will be used to crucify you in a court of law if the police, no offense, don't recall his testimony with 100% accuracy. All right, now this brings us back to that pop quiz I warned you about. I told you earlier, remember, it's only been a few minutes, and you weren't up all night, and you weren't the subject of physical duress. You were in the relaxed setting of a classroom here. You were given heads-up advance notice that you would be quizzed on this. Question. We'll start with a couple of easy ones. Remember that article I read you about that? How many people did the police find shot to death last night at that Ocean View apartment that I told you about? A, 1, B, 2, C, 3, D, 4. Who says A? B. C. Get this. Get that with a camera. Show us. Move that camera up. Look how many hands we've got there for C. Okay, D. You're all wrong. Everybody who raised their hand, you are the kind of people who should never talk to the police under any circumstances for as long as you live. Why is C not the right answer, by the way? If you know, raise your hand. Yes. Excellent. I didn't say anybody was shot. I didn't say gun, bullet, shooting, firearms. Didn't use any of those words. But I don't blame you if you thought that I did. This is the way the human mind works. We hear things. We fill in details. I said gangland-style slang. That may or may not imply something, but it doesn't mean that anybody was shot. And that's the problem. You see, even if your client is innocent and only tells the truth and doesn't tell them anything incriminating, and his statement is videotaped, his answers can be used to crucify him. You might say, wait, how can that happen? I insisted. In my insistence, I called the police and I said, look, if you want to talk to my client, you can talk to him, but only if you videotape the whole thing. I don't want there to be any debate between the two of you over what happened. Okay, we'll videotape the whole thing. If the police don't recall their questions with 100% accuracy, he'll be convicted on that statement alone. For example, suppose a man goes to the police, they say we're investigating a possible murder, a shooting, and the guy says, quote, I don't know who killed Jones, Officer Brooke, with all due respect. It wasn't me. I've never touched or fired a gun in my life. How can that help incriminate this man? How could that possibly be used against this man to help convict him? You would think it's inconceivable. It's as easy as pie. All the officer has to do is read the statement to the jury, and then the prosecutor says, Officer Brooke, was there anything about that statement that confused you or surprised you? Yes, there was, he says, in a moment of sinister high drama in the courtroom. And what was that? And then Officer Brooke turns to the jurors and he says, I never said anything about a shooting. I said we were investigating a murder. He was the one who brought up a gun. Then you turn to your client says, that's not true, that's not true. I remember he was the one, or one of the cops. I was with them for 3 hours. One of them in the car said something about, they said they had a witness that I was the shooter. Okay, I'll put you on the stand. And then your client testifies, no, they did tell me shooting. They mentioned it before I said anything about a gun. They brought it up first. And then the police said, that's not true. And now what, it's your word against theirs? For what? You're gambling with your client's life. And police officers can very easily make a mistake like that, just as so many of you did just a few minutes ago, about whether you recalled having heard me say something about somebody actually being shot. Police make mistakes, innocently, inadvertently, unintentionally. Any statement, no matter how exculpatory it may seem on its face, can be used to crucify you all by itself if the police are either willing to lie, not likely, or if they just have an innocent misrecollection of the details as to what they did and did not tell you before you told them what you said. All of these, by the way, all of these problems disappear if you take Justice Jackson's advice and say, thank you very much, officer, but no thanks. How about this one? Here we go. Now, here's the most surprising of all. I've saved the most surprising one for a last. Let's suppose you've got the following scenario. Client's thinking about talking to the police. He says, I've got nothing to hide. They think that I killed somebody in Virginia Beach last night. Well, this is what your client tells you in confidence. I don't know who robbed that store. It wasn't me. In fact, I got a pretty good alibi. I wasn't even in Virginia Beach that night, last night. I was 4 hours away visiting my mother in the Outer Banks. Unfortunately, no, I did not pay for gas with a credit card. I used cash, and so I've got no witnesses that can prove I was there except my word, and of course, Mama, for what that's worth, which is nothing. So your client says, well, so the police want to talk to me, and I want to seem cooperative, so what I'll do is I'll tell them that I was in the Outer Banks last night. Now, there's nothing on its face incriminating about any of that. Let's assume, by the way, that you believe with all your doubt, you've given your client a polygraph exam. You've known him for years. You've been going to the same Bible study for 30 years. You know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he's telling you the truth. And he's not admitting anything. He's not admitting motive. He's not admitting opportunity. He's not admitting that he was there. How on earth could this come back to haunt us? How on earth could this come back to be used against us? Be honest, raise your hand if you really think the answer to that question is, I can't see how it could possibly be used against me. You're afraid I'll call on you, right? I won't call on you. Well, you're wrong. You're dead wrong. You're always wrong. Everything you say, every time you talk to the police, you will regret it. You see, the problem is, here it is. This is the last point. I think it's almost, even if your client is innocent and only tells the truth and doesn't tell the police anything incriminating, and the entire interview, questions and answers are videotaped, even his truthful answers can be helped to use crucify even an innocent man if the police, through no fault of theirs, end up in the possession of any evidence, even mistaken and unreliable evidence, that anything your client told them was false, even if in fact it was true. Again, going back to this example from a moment ago. Let's suppose I go ahead and I meet with the police. I think I got nothing to hide. I tell them I was in the Outer Banks last night, officer. How can that be used to convict me? By itself, it cannot. It cannot help at all by itself. But what if I later find out, to my horror, after I put my cards on the table, that they've got a witness, a girl that I went to high school with, an unimpeachable witness. We've never been enemies. She'd have no reason to lie.
All right, well, Jack, they cut us off. I think we're giving out too much information.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But, yeah, Bobby put in a real good link in there. And it's when the police subpoena your Facebook information, here's what Facebook sends them, so you'll have to go to the link. Let's say goodnight to Susie. She's leaving us. We're down to the last 15 minutes.
Close to it.
Yeah. So, anything you want to comment on, Stacey? I'll go through the list here.
Hello?
She's still there. She might be on hold. How about Kat? What do you think?
Pardon?
Yeah, you want to chime in on anything you heard?
No, not at this moment.
Okay. All right, Nora, take it away.
Okay, well, you know, obviously we know what not to do. But they're always going to push the weight in regards to not wanting people to have their rights. You know, they'll always approach, okay, what's going on? We're here to help you. Please explain. Somebody's not going to understand what their rights are, and they're going to explain, and that's all they need. That's all they need.
Yep.
Because they know not everybody understands their rights or knows their rights. So that's where they come in, and, you know, I wouldn't call it taking advantage of, okay, I would highly look at it in regards to the knowledge, in regards to they know who knows their rights and who doesn't, obviously. So it's almost like they prey on the weak.
You know, there's an old saying, people know how smart you are when you open your mouth.
Right.
Go ahead.
So, you know, unfortunately, that's where it puts everybody at a certain bay. Meaning, you know, if you got pulled over, you know exactly what to say. You know
mm-hmm.
how to stand firm versus somebody that doesn't have a clue, doesn't understand or know their rights.
Shut up.
Okay, say if somebody pulled me over and, no, I'm not going to show you my license. You know exactly who I am. Well, right there, you're combative and you're hostile and you're resisting. That's their story, but, you know, unfortunately, you know, who's going to pay more attention? The badge versus the non-badge.
Mm-hmm.
And who's going to win for that minute? The badge.
For that minute. All it takes is a minute to get screwed.
Well, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's not like the people that don't have a concept or an idea of what their rights are. It's because they feel, because they were always taught and raised, they are there to help, serve, and protect. That's what it states on their cars. Unfortunately.
A lie.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? You know, like I said, I know
that they do. You know, the unfortunate thing is, what is right? What is right is for people that want to do the right thing, and unfortunately, it doesn't happen that way. You know, I've dealt with police on a specific issue on and off, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have rights, even though being a victim, I didn't have them. And I was stated to that
mm-hmm.
effect. And I said, well, wait a minute. You know, I do have my rights.
Right.
But you're not letting me have them.
No.
There's a difference.
That's it.
If somebody sits there, if an officer approaches me, okay, and slams a piece of paper on a table and tells me, I have to sign this. I said, well, wait a minute, what is this? You know, and then when they tell me this is giving away my rights, I said, I'm not giving away my rights. You
mm-hmm.
won't let me have my rights. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's annoying.
Exactly.
It's excessively annoying. So, you know, the system doesn't work. We know this. It does to one degree, but not to everything else. Okay? So my thought on it is always going to be if there was ever any future issue in that regard that you know of, that you know about with me,
right.
Would I do that again? No. Because it's a no-win situation.
That's true.
And it's pretty sad, because that's how so many people stand back, and they stand down. Mark away.
Yes, they do.
Because it's easier.
It is. It's easier to let somebody else do it.
Yeah.
Easier to let somebody else be the guinea pig.
Right. Did anything take place? No, I didn't see nothing.
I'm sorry?
Do you know anything? No, I mean, here's your question. Did you see anything? No? Do you know anything? No?
Okay. Sure.
It's just that easy.
It is that easy. It's like I said, like, Bill's favorite two words, shut up.
Yeah, shut up. You know, I actually one time, and now this I thought was actually funny, you know, the same person that wanted me to sign the sheet, you know, it was like so long later, there was an incident that took place at my one neighbor's place. Well, I mean, I didn't know him, but, you know, seen the person. So, you know, with emergency vehicles there, actually standing on my front porch, and here rolls up, you know, a cop, and he's like, what's going on? And I approach the car, I'm like, what? He's like, what's going on here? I said, how would I know? You have the radio. I'm sorry. But, hello? Was he in the donut shop? You know. Was in the donut shop and came across the radio. Just because somebody's my neighbor doesn't mean I'm right there. Hey, I don't know you, but what's going on?
Yeah.
You know? I was so mad, you know? And I was just like cursing, you know? My daughter's like, Mom, slow down. I'm like, he has a nerve to ask me. He has a badge.
It's
It's like when they
like,
say,
oh, moron.
You're not going to tell us anything? I don't have to.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, so like I said, I just found that ridiculous. I mean, has anybody ever stopped you and said, what's going on? You have to laugh. Right now,
or
it's
where
fine.
Are you going?
Yeah, I mean, like right now, it's fine. But back then, no, I was pissed.
No.
Like,
what's funny is when they go, you know why I pulled you over? No, but you're probably going to tell me. Well, I just want to ask you where you're going. I'm going to point A.
Right.
Well, where are you coming from? Point B. You're not going to answer my questions? Absolutely
no,
not.
No, because now I'm in point C. We'll be going to part D soon.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're down to the last five. I'm going to take us out with a good song here by Joe Walsh.
Okay, just remember the music for Thursdays now.
I will.
We'll see everybody back on Thursday.
No worries. So this one is this one's by Joe Walsh. I invite everybody to come back Thursday. Bill will be here. He's got a few things going on still. And we'll talk to you all Thursday.
Okay. Night.
Good night. I'm going to let Joe Walsh take us out here.
Okay.
And, everybody have a good, safe week. And don't forget, Bill's Blessing of the Bikes is on Sunday. And a quick one.
I can't
here,
be
I got,
there, but maybe you guys can, you know,
shoot
yeah,
we'll
me a
some pictures.
For, I'm kidding. I know.
I will send you some pictures. The other thing I wanted to talk about was, real quick, it's a, hang on. Let's see. Okay, real quick. This one's for immediate release. And Sharpfinger Films announced that the American legend Sonny Barger is producing an independent feature film adapted from his book, successful novel Dead in Five Heartbeats. In the film, Infidels MC's former president, Patch Kincaid, is dragged back into his prior life when the peace accord between the clubs is broken. The fictional motorcycle clubs will be portrayed by several authentic MCs, including members from Arizona and California. The film will be shot in location in Phoenix and metropolitan area using innovative 3D shooting methods to provide for all kinds of viewing entertainment. The film will be directed by accomplished filmmaker Jeff Santo and produced by Sonny, Fritz Klapp, and Santo. The film is slated for production. So, if you got any more information about that, send me an email and I'll send you the links. Alright, we're going to go out here now with Joe Walsh in the city.
Warriors, come out to play.